Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Jonathan Horn is a former speechwriter for George W. Bush. He's also written a book about George Washington's final days called Washington's End, The Final Years and Forgotten Struggle. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about the similarities or dissimilarities in a minute. But first, let's talk about today. Jonathan, welcome to the show. You're on WGN. And I suppose I would also say congratulations for having the honor of writing a speech for a president. I mean, what a, if you're in the business of writing speeches, that has to be the best gig, right?
It's a great honor to be able to write a speech for a president, and today is an example why you're able to hit a gigantic audience that you can never hit as a writer otherwise. And of course, the words you're writing are the words that you know a president wants to say.
Yeah, I guess that's a question in the back of people's minds. Were those his words and his thoughts or somebody else? But at the end of the day, you have to channel that person, right?
Right. If you write a speech that you want to write, that you think you would like to deliver, the speech is going to fail because the president, if he's any sort of good president, will not read that speech. Presidents know what they want to say at their best, and they're looking for speechwriters to write the speech that they themselves would write if they had time to do it.
How involved was W in writing speeches then? How much consultation did he give you?
President George W. Bush was very involved with the speech writing process. He had a big black Sharpie marker that with which he edited speeches, and he was not afraid to use that Sharpie marker in the Oval Office and let you know when you had missed the mark.
So what would you have Joe Biden say today? I know that you were writing for a Republican, but you were writing for a president who had to heal a nation or, you know, bridge the divide. There's always that. What would best come out of the president's mouth today?
Well, I do think, and from all indications, what we're hearing that might be in the speech today, that you're going to hear Vice President Biden give a speech that talks about bringing the country together. And I think that's probably right. An inauguration is a moment that should bring the country together. It's a moment when we all start off anew with a new president who's all of our president. And so I think he'll be talking about the soul of America, restoring the soul of America. That's a phrase that he seems to really like, along with the phrase, a time for healing. And obviously, he's not going to be able to ignore some of the serious challenges that our country faces at this moment, including the pandemic, which is going to be visible to everybody watching the speech, because you're not going to have the type of audience that we're used to seeing for an inauguration.
If you dwell on that, though, then it takes a negative vibe. I suppose you want to mix as much positivity in as you can, too, right?
That's right, and I think that's why his tone will be trying to put this in a historical perspective for Americans. You know, there's been lots of things that have happened recently that have made us question things that we previously took for granted. And I expect him to say things like, we faced great challenges as a country before, we've overcome those challenges, and we can do so again if we come together as a people.
Do you strive as a speechwriter or maybe the president himself to come up with the signature line, you know, the 1,000 points of light kind of rhetoric? Is there a line that you think they'll especially craft that they hope becomes the soundbite of this speech? And I wonder what that sounds like.
Well, the speechwriters may have a dream of being able to come up with a line like that. At the same time, I found if I thought too much about any one line, then oftentimes that would be the line that President Bush would cross off with a Sharpie marker.
Exactly.
You never really know what people are going to latch on to.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I visited with a speechwriter for Barack Obama before the show. And he sort of said that, too. You don't get to decide what the line is. I mean, 1,000 points of light, just as a for instance, or shining city on a hill, maybe they knew those ones were coming. But
ask not what
your country can do for you.
Exactly.
And I don't even know if all of these were inaugural lines, but clearly signature lines for presidencies. So sometimes you do get the sense that they are trying to craft a memorable moment. But other times, the crowd will decide. They'll let you know which one they quote, right?
Right, and sometimes the line that we look back on as in history as being particularly significant is not a line that was even really appreciated at the time it was given. So you just really don't know how these things play. Presidential speeches are given for the moment, but they're also written for history, and they live on far beyond what we can imagine.
I want to ask you about should he address the President Trump and what he should say about that. But just on the point you just now made, did George Washington have a what's the signature line from George Washington that we should all remember?
Well, you know, I was thinking George Washington's second inaugural address was the shortest inaugural address ever given. So you can do this in a really short amount of time if you so choose. The inaugural address that I was thinking about as we came on today was the inaugural address that Thomas Jefferson gave after the very heated election of 1800, which was a disputed election. And he talked about it. If you had been from another country and you had been visiting America during this time, you might have thought that our country was going to come apart because you weren't used to our traditions of freedom of speech. But then he said, we're all Republicans, we're all Federalists. And that, of course, became a very famous line. That was the two major political parties at that point in history.
Yeah. Should Joe Biden talk much about Donald Trump? Should he mention him by name? The president only referred to the administration this morning, the incoming one. What should Biden say about Donald Trump?
Well, obviously, this is a very difficult circumstance for Joe Biden, and the fact that Donald Trump will not be on stage is a real departure from recent American history. The person who will be on stage in some way trying to stand in for some semblance of a peaceful transition of power is the Vice President, Mike Pence. And I would think that Joe Biden should acknowledge Mike Pence in some way. It's not going to be a large part of the speech. It's probably just a line, but something to gesture toward him being there to stand in for the expectation that Americans have of a peaceful transition of power.
But just briefly, so he does mention Donald Trump by name. He thanks him for his service. Does he say something positive? Does he try and spin it? I mean, look, 70 million people did not vote for the man that's going to be giving these words. So that's one way to be inclusive, right?
That's true, and I actually expect Joe Biden to specifically speak to people who do not vote for him. I think he's going to acknowledge that in his speech and say, look, I'm going to be your president even if you didn't vote for me, and I'm not going to look at you any less favorably than any other American because you didn't vote for me. And I think that will be a part of the speech today.
Jonathan Horn's on a phone line. I'm going to let you go, Jonathan. You wrote speeches for George W. Bush. Your latest book is Washington's End, about the final days of the George Washington presidency. What's the thing that surprises us when we read your book? What jumps out at me?
Well, I think what will jump out at you is just how difficult it can be to surrender power, and I hope it'll give people more appreciation for the precedent that George Washington set in March 1797 when he really did show something to the world that people had never seen before.
And that is a transition of power, a surrender of power willingly and peacefully, correct?
That's right. It was his decision to leave the presidency after two terms and have a peaceful transition of power from one living head of state to another. We take that for granted today, but if you read this book, you will see how difficult it was for George Washington to do and how many forces were trying to pull him back into power.
Didn't the King of England, upon the discovery that Washington willingly gave up power, said, if this is true, he is the greatest man who ever lived. What a selfless servant. I mean, that was the way Europe looked at what we were doing here, right?
Right, and it really is difficult, I think, because we take the words former president almost for granted today. We assume that that's just part of the way this country works. But the only reason the country really works that way so seamlessly is because of this precedent that George Washington set when he left the presidency. And he was really eager to get back to Mount Vernon, his home, and to put politics behind him. But he learned it was much more difficult to do so than he imagined.
I'm going to read your book. I follow that part of our country's history kind of closely, so that's next on my list. Washington's End, The Final Years and Forgotten Struggle, about George Washington's departure from the Oval Office. Nice to talk to you, Jonathan. Well done.
Thanks so much for having me.